With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Good evening and welcome back to Red Shirts and Runabouts, part of the Heroes Podcast Network. I'm one of your regular hosts, Gregory Bosco. And with me, as always, is Derek Mayer. But before we let him talk about himself again, we have a very special guest to the show, Angie Peterson. She's the owner of KC Geeks. I don't know how I could just stutter with that. And she's also a published Star Trek author. So it's really, really cool to have her on the show. So Angie, go ahead and say a few things about yourself. Introduce yourself to our fans out there.
Well, like you said, I'm Angie Peterson, and I am head geek and editor at kcgeeks.com, which is a resource hub for everything geeky in Kansas City. And like you said, I wrote a book on Star Trek. It's called the Star Trek Craft Book, and it's full of 25 different crafts across the various Star Trek shows.
That's awesome, and I love that I've actually been talking to a Star Trek author. I've always wanted to write something, but my brain doesn't really work that well.
Oh, you need to give yourself more credit.
I don't know, dude. Yeah. Anyways, Derek, say hi, buddy.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Welcome back.
And this is, our third week for our listeners out there where we're kind of doing the whole, you know, the best of the best. We pick a topic from each season. And we're still in season one, and this week we're actually talking about, like, our favorite alien encounter.
Now, wait, season one of which show, for anybody who...
Excuse me, you're right. Season one of Star Trek The Next Generation.
There we go. Yes. This is our last season one episode, so next week we'll be moving on to season two.
The Pulaski season, for those of you out there that aren't familiar. And it's a shame, because she gets such a bad rap, and it's not, like, her fault.
We'll get to that, I'm sure.
We'll get to that. But anyways, again, everybody, it's just we're kind of having some fun with this. You know, a couple weeks we talk about, you know, our favorite romance and, you know, kind of favorite people getting together. So this week it's the favorite alien encounter. So it could be anything that you could think of that happened in season one. And they did experiment with a lot of goofy alien stuff. So Angie, it's you and I that are doing the head-to-head this week.
That's right.
So Derek is going to actually be judging. So Angie, why don't you, in case you're not familiar, what we typically do is we kind of describe our episode a little bit. We don't go through the bit by bit like a normal review. We kind of just hit on the highlights.
Right.
Because when we were experimenting with it before, it's really easy for us Star Trek fans to get into that nitty gritty.
You know, sure.
Why is the dilithium chamber blue? Anyways.
Right.
Go ahead and introduce your show. Which episode did you pick?
Well, for the category of Alien Encounter for 500, Alex, I would like to choose Where No One Has Gone Before. And that in that episode, there was this random Star Trek guy Starfleet guy that was going around and improving warp drives of the various spaceships, and Mr. Kaczynski. And he came on board to improve the warp drive of the Enterprise, and he came on with his assistant, whose name was unpronounceable, even by his own admission, but he was an alien from Tau Alpha C, and he was there to assist with the update that would improve the warp drive. And when he first came on board, the assistant, Deanna, felt kind of an empty space, as if he wasn't even there. So that was kind of mysterious from the get-go. That's kind of setting it up. I'm not sure how far we want to get into it from there or what.
that's a pretty good setup for the episode.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, Kaczynski always just bothered me, and I'm sure he's supposed to.
He's supposed to. I figure he did his job as an actor in, you know, making us not enjoy being in his space.
I mean, it gives me hope for my future in Starfleet if he can make it. I mean, you would think at some point, I know, I love how Riker, he's not even on the ship for like 5 minutes, and Riker's already given him crap.
Oh, yep. Riker is so done with this guy, but he's so pompous, you know, and so he just gets in his own way. One fun thing about this episode for people who don't know. So the title is Where No One Has Gone Before. It parallels the second pilot of the original series, Where No Man Has Gone Before. So it's kind of a reimagining of that title, which I always liked.
Mm-hmm.
And it's another one of our favorite MacGuffins where it's yet another alien that Troy cannot sense. It's like the poor woman. It's like, let her act. But they're like, to give it some mystery, like, I sense nothing, Captain.
Sorry, I got nothing. Nothing.
I mean, I think we're up to more aliens that she can't figure out than she can.
Troy gets much better later when they let her actually be an officer. Then she gets some interesting stories, and they let her actually act. Marina Sirtis can act, it turns out, if you just let her. So
yeah, just let her do her thing, and you can even kind of figure that out at the conventions when she's doing her talk on stage. It's like the woman's a hell of an actress, and she looks great on screen. It's just like, just let her be Deanna Troi. Let her come up with goofy stuff about the alien. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been better if she like sensed, like, I don't know, not malevolence. That's too harsh of a word, but like, I don't know, Cap.
Or even like, you know, kind of a halfway there. I feel like he's here, but some part of him isn't, or some, you know, something like that, you know, that he has somewhere else he needs to be, or, you know, some sort of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Would have worked.
Like a shadow of an image, like a ghost, yeah, or something like that.
I mean, they could have gotten like poetic and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or sensing that he doesn't want to be there. He somehow wants to take the ship somewhere else. Something like mysterious like that, because
right,
with them not with her not being able to sense him at all, we just focus on the goofiness that is Kaczynski and just how terrible of an engineer he is.
Right.
And pretty aggressive and jerky with everybody. I mean,
very.
Yeah, he's pretty very awful.
It's like, whoa, tone it, get down, guy. I understand you got a job to do, but, you know, we do too. And we're all Starfleet here, so let's play nice. I'm going to have to bring HR in here.
So, Greg, why don't you tell us a bit about your episode then?
Well, I actually picked the season finale for season one, which was The Neutral Zone. And I did that because it's kind of a fun two-parter alien type. And what I mean by that is, of course, it opens up with the famous finding a random space probe that's doing space probe stuff. And Picard's conveniently not on the ship. So it's like already some of those famous things Star Trek does. To add to that tension, right? The captain's gone. They just found a probe. What does this mean? And of course, Data just inexplicably is like, I want to investigate it because it's old.
I think
old.
This is a missed opportunity if we don't.
Exactly. And Riker's like, fine, whatever.
Whatevs. Be back by the time the boss is back.
Exactly. And it kind of reminded me of the original Space Seed original series episode, because they had the historian on board.
Oh, right.
Right.
And you think that somebody like
that...
Yeah, the only time ever. You think somebody like that would have had her on, or him on the Enterprise D.
Right.
Just the random, you know, science blue shirt turns around on the bridge is like, wait, Commander, that's a 1995 cryogenic ship.
Yes.
But anyway, so they find the humans on board. There's like three that are alive, but there's like 12 pods on the ship,
mm-hmm,
and they're all dead. So they find these three humans that are essentially...
Which is not troubling at all.
Yeah, no. Not troubling at all. But they're essentially aliens because they're from the 20th century, and I love it because it's that science fiction cliche that they froze themselves because they were all dying of something. You know, one had like cardiac myopathy or something, another one...
An embolism,
yeah, which typically, I don't know enough about medicine, but if you have an embolism, isn't that pretty bad? Like, that's not like that's not something that you have and you have time to be frozen, right?
It does sound bad.
I don't know. I'm sure there's a nurse or a doctor out there going, well, Greg, you have 15 minutes after having an embolism to be frozen. I'm like, fine, whatever. And then you get the New Orleans, Louisiana guitar player who's the best in the whole episode.
But he's basically just drinking himself to death or something.
Yeah, he had, like, liver issues and lung issues and, yeah.
And they're all like, he did this to himself?
Yeah.
He didn't want to live, but he was scared to die.
Right. But yeah.
Anyways, I bring them up because they're kind of like alien humans, but they're not the reason I picked this episode. I picked this episode because it was the reintroduction of the Romulans. Mm-hmm. And the main thing that made this my favorite alien encounter of season one is because Next Generation, more so than any of the other shows, ended up teasing the threat of the Romulans for 7 years. And they don't have full-blown, drawn-out battles with the Romulans in Next Generation. They don't have... It's always that tension that, you know, whenever there's a witty Picard on the neutral zone, there's like a Romulan commander that's... I hate to use the term equal, but for lack of a better term, equal in intelligence to Picard almost. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, the Romulans charge over the neutral zone, and then the Enterprise does, and the Romulans, and then one episode are like, now it's you who's charging across the neutral zone, Captain. It's like they're always that counterpoint, and I love that this is the episode where they reintroduce them, and they do it in a very subtle way to pay homage to kind of the Romulans of the original series. They're always that kind of threat, but they're kind of mysterious. And then, you know, the Romulans even throw in those cutting insults where... You know, Picard's like, or Picard and Riker, and like, how, we didn't destroy your outpost. And the one Romulan sub-commander's like, oh yeah, once we saw the destruction, we knew it couldn't be you. It's just, it's that little thing that the Romulans, it's that almost that the remnant Vulcan in them where, you know, every so often Spock would have that one-liner.
Sure.
Where, you know, the one woman, I can't even think of the episode name in the original series, the woman's talking to Spock, and she's like, I've never met a Vulcan before, and Spock's like, nor I have I ever met a work of art for myself or something.
Yeah, nor I a work of art, yes.
Yeah, and it's the random one-liners that Spock and Vulcans can do, and the Romulans do it in this episode. And, you know, the Romulans are like, hey, you know, for decades we've had our own internal stuff to deal with. The Captain, we're back.
Yeah.
And I love that because you don't realize in season one, you know, season one, I was like 9, I think. You don't realize what that means when you're watching it. And then you start watching it again. In every episode with the Romulans, there's more tension and then more tension and then more aggressiveness and more. We were all waiting for them to fight. You know, that the episode, the defector with the Admiral, the Romulan Admiral who betrays them, and then the Romulans surround the Enterprise, and then like 3 Klingon warships surround the Romulans. Everybody's sitting there going, yes, they're going to fight, they're going to fight, they're going to fight. And no, they don't. They keep that tension for 7 years, and that tension kind of starts with this episode, and I love that. Because I love those clever antagonists. I always have, whether it's books or show or TV shows or movies, I love the clever antagonist. And, you know, Derek, you know, I do all that Star Wars stuff. It's like, I know a lot of my friends love the Empire. I'm like, I actually think the Empire's kind of ridiculous. All they do is build gigantic spaceships. And they hope for the best. And it's like, you know, I'm watching The Hunger Games, and I'm like, President Snow's a moron. It's like, you take 1-2 kids from every district, and you force them to fight, and you never think there's going to be a rebellion. Like, you think this is going to stop? It's like... Those aren't clever antagonists, and I've always thought the Romulans are that clever kind of antagonist where they'll threaten, they're trying to goad the Federation to do stuff the entire time. And I like that. I think that's, it's just, it's aggressive and assertive and domineering in a way that's not offensive for Star Trek. They didn't turn him into, like, the laughingstock. Remember when they introduced a Ferengi for the first time?
Ugh.
And... It's because they were hoping the Ferengi would be like a good enemy villain for Starfleet, and they're like, this did not work. This didn't work at all.
They turned out kind of Jar Jar Binksy.
They did. They were really Jar Jar Binksy. And then you see him on DS9, and everybody's like, I love the Ferengi. So I think that's why I picked the neutral zone, is because even though it didn't introduce a new species, it reintroduced an old species that everybody had kind of forgotten. And... You know, I know there was the Romulan ambassador in Star Trek V, but we don't talk about that. And it's just, it's good to see the Romulans back. It's good to have a good villain. It's good to have an equal to the Federation, and the Romulan ships are gorgeous. Mm. And then the Romulans are always very carefully used in Next Generation, where you don't get bored with them. And I think that's one of the things that some people complained about with DS9. People kind of got bored with the Dominion, or Voyager with the Borg, where they're like, well, the Borg aren't even a threat anymore. It's like the Romulans for 7 seasons stayed a threat, and they never really attacked the Federation, like, full. I know there was skirmishes, but there was never a full-blown, you know, Operation Retrieve site type situation with the Romulans, and I love that.
Interesting. So I also thought it was interesting that, like, Picard was like, we don't know anything about this species, and we need more information. He had Troy, like, go research it, and she's like, well, there's very little information, and then she kind of delved into, like, who they are as a people, and, you know, that they are related to the Vulcans and things like that, but we haven't had any contact for 53 years, and then you hear from Worf, and he's like, well, they kind of killed my parents at Kittimer, so obviously he might have some knowledge about this species, and, like, they're acting like there's no knowledge about them.
Yeah, because Worf even said, is like, they attacked us when they're supposed to be our allies.
Yeah, so I'm thinking he might have a little insight.
But no, they shut down Worf. I know that's a meme out there, is how many times Picard shut down Worf.
Yeah. So.
Well, so do we want, since we're kind of going down this road, do we want to focus on the neutral zone and then circle back to where no one has gone before?
Sure. That's
okay. Cool. So something with the neutral zone I thought was kind of interesting, and I haven't decided if this is good or bad yet, but the main, so two things. The Romulan plot kind of mirrors the balance of terror from the original series. We have a Romulan ship that's going along our stations along the neutral zone, and they're being destroyed, but the ship stays cloaked and we're not sure what to do about it. And rather than being drawn out for 53 minutes, it's just part of this episode. So I always thought it was kind of interesting that the very first time we see the Romulans, it's almost the exact same story.
Hmm. Well, it's that, and I think this was retconned later when Next Generation really got standing on its own 2 feet, where the outposts were supposed to have been destroyed by the Borg. But then you have Q-Hu in season 2, where the Borg they're moving towards the Federation, but they're still like, what? Obviously a year away, but there's something like 30 light years away still, or not 30, like 300 light years away or whatever. And so when you kind of go back and rewatch the neutral zone, and everybody's like, oh yeah, this level of destruction, it's like the cities were just scooped up and the outposts were just scooped up off the planets, which is like what the Borg do, because that's what's happening in the beginning of Best of Both Worlds. And I think all that kind of got retconned later. I think for this episode, it was just, they wanted to introduce the Romulans, but they didn't want to introduce them in a way of, you know, big villain twirling their mustache, thumping their chest.
Yeah, that's so they definitely make
a
true.
Yeah, they make a situation where that both I almost said empires. The Federation's not an empire. But that both groups had to kind of deal with and think it's each other and poke at each other and tease each other. But once we saw the level of destruction, we knew it wasn't you guys over in Starfleet. Come on. You can't do that.
So my other thing for this episode is the Romulan plot, is it the A plot or is it the B plot? Because it feels like the B plot.
It feels like B to me.
It is definitely the B plot.
But it's the name of the episode.
It is the name of the episode. And heck, even the older guy that they rescued from the cryotubes when they're talking to the Romulans, he's even on there going, they don't know who in the hell attacked. They're hoping you know.
Yeah.
It's like the dude's been on the ship for like 3 days, and he already understands diplomacy with the Romulans better than the half of Starfleet.
Well, he's a businessman, and business is the same across generations.
I did kind of like that aspect, where you got a sense of why he was successful at one point in existence, right? That he is good at reading people and negotiating, and has probably dealt with business meetings like that. You know, so even out of context, he could tell that these guys were stalling, right?
Which I'll give credit to the three people they saved. They adapted pretty well to being on a starship.
Nobody freaked out about that at all. And also, there was no explanation of, or at least I didn't catch it, of why they were on the space probe.
Well, they were on for different reasons. So the businessman guy, who, of course, I can't remember their names at this point, but he did it on purpose. He froze himself so that way he could be cured later and be rich.
Well, I knew why they froze themselves, but why did they end up on the space probe?
Well, so I understood it as that it was supposed to shoot them into space. I think there was there was a line in there about how the ones that were kept in satellites were not risk of losing power or something like that. It was some throwaway line.
The brownouts.
Yes, brownouts.
That's right.
Well, yeah. I'm going to get with Angie on this, though, because I agree with her. How in the hell did they get so far away from Earth?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Without, you know, propulsion and things like that. And nobody was freaking out at, like, being in outer space and, you know, the computerized aspect of everything. I mean, Louisiana guy did remark on, you know, the replicator, but they weren't like, how is this even possible? How does this work? They weren't at all. They were just like, oh, this is the best martini I've ever had.
Yeah. The girl, she passed out when she saw Worf, but then she immediately woke up like 5 minutes. I know they changed scenes, but there's, and that's what's weird thing. Cause it's almost like this episode is built on two B plots.
I would not disagree with that.
That's funny. That's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, because when you think about it, they're not connected to each other. They kind of cross paths a little bit. But the show's not necessarily about the three survivors.
Right.
It's titled after the Romulans, but the Romulans are only in for the last 5 minutes.
Right. But the three survivors were really kind of like a monkey wrench into dealing with the Romulans because, you know, the businessman guy was like paging the captain when they were trying to have like a senior officer meeting. And he's like, I can't deal with this right now. So it was really just an impediment rather than like a storyline. So like they were both not helping either storyline progress.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I never really thought about it that way. That's kind of funny. It's an interesting way to look at the episode now. So, okay, so we meet the Romulans, of course. We get to see them, and they seem kind of annoyed with us. So I guess my question here is, does this episode do anything to progress the Romulans at all from where we last saw them in the original series?
I would say no, personally. I mean, they barely are introduced. Deanna goes through the introduction of who they are, you know, and they're creatures of extremes. They're 1 minute they're violent, 1 minute they're tender, and they're intensely curious, and they have a strong belief in their own intelligence. And so she kind of like tells us who they are, and you kind of get that arrogance in the communication between the two ships. But other than that, I mean, there's not a lot more than that. It's almost like the episode was just to introduce them.
And that's kind of what my preference is on enjoying it is because they didn't, it would have been so, if this was released today, then they somehow would have turned, I'm not talking like Star Trek, I'm just talking like another mainstream show. They would turn an antagonist into some weird, goofy, over-the-top, you know, this species.
Some power or something. Yeah. Some meta power.
The Zen Onions. They eat humans or something. And everybody would be like, oh, okay, yeah, we've seen this 1,000 times. And that's what I love is the subtlety of that aggressiveness. That, you know, the one sub-commander says when Riker's like, you know, you crossed a neutral zone, blah, blah, blah. And the sub-commander's like, oh, well, we don't really need your permission.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's, well, Riker, he does kind of got you there. I mean, they crossed a neutral zone and you're not going to do anything about it. And they know you're not going to do anything about it.
True.
Interesting. Okay. So, Greg, is there anything else you want to add about the neutral zone before we give Angie an opportunity to talk more about her episode?
Mainly just going to end with that I love the two B plots because I love how they throw the 20th century characters in there. They're supposed to be the fish out of water kind of people, because now Starfleet's dealing with three unknowns of people they just saved off a ship, and they're dealing with that, and they're meeting the Romulans, and then we get 7 years of awesome use of the Romulans. And I'm not entirely pleased with how Romulans have been handled, like, since. But that's for different topics on a different time.
Now, I would like to point out that the 7 years plot line does not occur in season one, which is what we're talking about.
Boom.
True, but without this episode, it never would have happened.
All right.
Interesting.
Just had to point that out.
No, I appreciate that. I see
where this is going.
That's interesting. I appreciate that. That's fun. Okay.
All right. Hey, my son was in debate, so there.
I'm good with that.
that's as much as my debate knowledge as I have is, you know, my son was in it.
Through osmosis.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a good way.
And he argued with me all the time.
I was in debate in high school myself, so that's very interesting. Okay.
I did drama.
I believe you.
Thank you. Thank you, Derek. You know, the face and the voice for radio. I get it. Ha ha.
No, I think the voice is perfect. Seriously, I want to, like, write a radio show for you to voice.
I don't know about that.
Maybe just a short story he can narrate.
Maybe Ooh, a short story. There we go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Speaking of short stories, every time this is brought up, I have to mention it. For those who are Trekkies and love LeVar Burton, he has his own podcast called LeVar Burton Reads, where he just reads short fiction, and they get special effects and background music and stuff like that for it, and they're all wonderful. So that's out there. Just a plug, LeVar Burton. So, but, all right, so we're going to switch back over then to where no one has gone before and give Angie a chance to talk more about her episode. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break.
Hey there, I'm Batman, and I wanted to tell you about my friends at the Screen Heroes podcast. They deliver sweet justice in the form of discussing movies, television, and me. They love my movies. Every single one of them. Yes, even that one. Sometimes they even have me on as a guest, which is thrilling. You can find them at twitch.tv/heroespodcasts. Live on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Gotham time. If you can't tune in live, the new shows go up on places like Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Gotham Radio, Themyscira Live, and Blog Talk Radio. Now, back to your regularly scheduled Batcast.
Okay, so, Angie, let's talk more about Where No One Has Gone Before.
Okay, well, I picked this one because it was an episode that was very much centric to an alien species. I mean, the alien species was the A plot or the A story, and it was about how he impacted the ship and how they, related to what he was able to do. And Wesley kind of bonded with him and was very interested in him, and he was very interested in Wesley. And that really, he kind of talked to Picard and put Wesley on kind of a different path. So it was very much centralized around this alien species that we had never seen before and does show up later, but was standalone in season one, as we are talking about. and I just thought, it was a very interesting concept, very sci-fi, you know, that he was kind of lending his spirit or energy or whatever to propel the ship light years ahead and into this, you know, zone that they didn't even know what it was, and so that was very sci-fi, so that was very Trek-like, and but they didn't know that he was what was doing it, and so the mystery of it all was very Trek-like, and so to me it just really kind of epitomized a lot of what I expect from Trek. They did kind of go down the cheesy route of channel your thoughts to bring us home. You know, it's like clap, Tinkerbell, clap. And so that I wasn't my favorite, but, otherwise I thought that the episode, I mean, immediately when we talked about the topic of best alien encounter, I thought, oh, well, that's the Traveler. And I'm like, yes, it's in season one. So that was even for most of the series, I was thinking of he was the first alien that I thought of. So,
yeah, I mean, he definitely fits the bill of alien, right? I mean, he's so alien that we can't pronounce his name.
Right.
Troy can't read that he even exists on our field, in our dimension. He's got these crazy abilities. You're totally right about some of the cheesiness. I mean, there's definitely some lines that are cheesy, like when these things are just kind of showing up, like when we get to see the Worf's pet.
Yes, the Targ.
The Targ, yes, which is really just...
That's a cat?
It's a warthog in fur, which is still a step up from the alien dog with the horn creature that Sulu had in the original series.
Yes.
But Tasha has that kind of lame line about that being a kitty cat. And, like, it's Denise Crosby. Like, she's tough. She's the head of security.
Right.
Like, seeing her say kitty cat, you're like, really? Like, it just kind of makes me giggle. But
well, if you think about it, is it the first time she's ever heard of, like, a Klingon pet?
Right. I mean, I can't imagine that
she's served in Starfleet for, like, 10 years at this point, right? She went to the Academy.
I mean, Spock had a pet. I don't remember what it was called, but it was kind of similar to a dog. So, I mean, and that was, you know, centuries before, so it's not like people don't have pets. Data had a pet. I mean, so...
Yeah, but that was the type of cat I guess she was used to.
Yes. Okay, yes. I would not have called... I would have called it much closer to a, you know, warthog, like you said, than a cat.
Yeah. That was kind of weird. And, of course, you have Picard with his grandmother, which is kind of an interesting scene as well.
Yeah. I liked that.
Kind of weird?
Well, it is a very Trek-like thing, you know, where...
Right, tea in the hallway.
Not necessarily the tea as much as just, you know, hallucinating and thoughts coming to fruition. I mean, things like that happened in the original series and, of course, would happen well after this episode. But the Traveler is kind of the central part of it. We talk about A and B plots, but is there a B plot in this episode?
Thinking.
Not really. I mean, maybe the cast and crew kind of reacting to their memories. It's a direct result of the Traveler, but it's kind of exposing us to more of what the cast and crew kind of their inner feelings on some things.
True,
or maybe the unmasking of Kaczynski, even though that's related to the alien as well.
See, that's what I'm saying. I feel like
he stays as an engineer. That's the weird thing.
Yeah, this episode kind of plays out like an original series episode.
Yeah.
You know, there really isn't much of a B plot, if there's one at all. I kind of feel like all of the stuff we're talking about are just aspects of the A plot.
I would not disagree with you.
You know, so that's kind of an interesting take on it too, is it's a different type of storytelling that Star Trek tended to get away from later on, where it had its A and B plots regularly. But the Traveler is an interesting character in himself. He is incredibly alien to us. And like the Romulans, he does come back a few times. He comes, you know, there's an arc here with Wesley. And this is the beginning of learning where Wesley ends up. He, you know, this puts him on the track to join the Academy, which is also interesting. But we never really learn anything else about the Traveler. This is kind of all we get from a character development, or even in this case, a species development perspective, which is kind of a shame.
It is still rather mysterious.
He's kind of like a MacGuffin as a character almost. It's like he can do stuff and stuff happens, but they never explain how or why.
Yeah, it was kind of squishy, as in, you know, it's his energy, and he loans his energy, and so we need the crew's energy, and, well, okay, so what exactly do you mean by energy?
Like, if we could add something, maybe we would add that, you know, why does he care about Kaczynski so much? Maybe somehow that engineer saved him on an away mission somehow. He found him, and he was some, whatever.
Right.
You know, give some reason for them to be paired together, because there's honestly no reason a traveler would pick this.
Right. I was just thinking that. It's like, why would you hang out with this guy of your free will? Are you really that dedicated to whatever your purpose is that you can just hang out with this arrogant douche?
Yeah, I mean, because he is. I mean, he's arrogant and he's hostile. Look what I've done. Look what I've done. And I'm going to do it here. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, look what you didn't do at all.
Even though Riker, like 5 minutes into the episode, had the perfect line when he's talking to Picard. It's like, Picard, the other ship was like 80 years old. It's like, of course it needed a tune-up. Now it runs better.
Right.
I'm like,
this is the flagship.
Yeah, this is the flagship. It's been in space for 2 years.
Right.
And I appreciated Riker's take on that, because he's basically admitting that, yeah, maybe this did fix something on an engine that needed work, but our engines are brand new, so this should do nothing.
Right.
And, I mean, he was right.
Yeah, he was right. I mean, and he's doing what a second-in-command should do. He's looking out for his ship before some random guy starts poking at the engine.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I will say, it always bothered me, the rank insignia that Kaczynski has, we never see again.
Oh, he must have been some special something.
Maybe I don't know.
Engineering rank or something, or maybe a consultant. Because if he's just going around from ship to ship to ship, maybe he's just like a consulting engineer. Not to be confused with a consulting detective.
Maybe. It's strange because, like, he doesn't have a comm badge, but he has to wear a uniform. But he doesn't have pips. He's got this other symbol. You know, and it's just not, you know, it's not like Chief O'Brien has a different rank insignia because he's a chief and... you know, so it's not something like that. It's very odd. I never quite figured that out.
I did not notice it, I'll be honest.
Well, and if you think about it, he talks to people in Starfleet, like in a... I mean, Andrew was correct. He was an asshole. He was a douche to other people in Starfleet. And I'm like, you keep imagining, like, under no circumstances would Geordi LaForge ever talk to Captain Picard or Commander Riker like this.
Or anybody.
Or Chief O'Brien, or Scotty, or B'Elanna Torres. And B'Elanna Torres was a Maquis soldier.
Right,
and she still didn't talk to Starfleet like this. I mean, yeah, she made fun of him, but she wasn't a condescending, irritating person to people. She was just a half-Klingon, aggressive woman, which is fine. I mean, we saw the same thing with Kalar. It was great. This guy, is Picard going to write a report to Starfleet going, look, I don't know who this guy is, but...
I'm telling you, HR needs to get involved.
we're clearly Space not HR. Supposed to like him at all. You know, and it's not the first or only time Star Trek does this, where they bring in a new character who's only going to be around this one time that we're just clearly not supposed to like.
Right. We're guided not to like him, obviously. Right.
And so by the end of the episode, there's nothing we can do but not really like him. You know, so that's kind of interesting in itself. So this is an interesting kind of question. How do you say which is the best alien encounter when you have a return of what is really a classic Star Trek alien species in the Romulans, who, you know, have a big presence, of course, in this episode. The neutral zone has a lot of parallels to Balance of Terror. Or do you go with Where No One Has Gone Before, which focuses on something completely alien from what we're used to that we don't really get to see much of in the future, really just this one person. And it flings the Enterprise into a part of space that is as alien as it really gets, right? A billion light years from our own galaxy is kind of an interesting pair of episodes here. They're very different. Which makes this a little bit tougher. You know, the last couple of weeks we had Best Romance and Best Wesley Crusher episode of season one. And I felt like those were easier for us to pick from. So what if you guys each give your last, like, minute or two pitch for why you think yours is the better Alien Encounter episode?
I was afraid you were going to do this.
You had to do it in debate, so you
know. I know, and I wasn't in debate.
Closing arguments.
Wait, let me call my son. He's there in is, law school. He'll be able to help.
There is no phone a friend on this show.
Oh man. Well, I picked this one because, like I said, it was a absolutely new alien. To be true to the word alien, as an unknown species, we weren't really sure what he did, how he did it, and it was just kind of a mystery from the very beginning, and that stayed true throughout the episode. We got to see different parts of space that also was alien to them. But at the same time, we got some character development that this new alien person, creature, also brought out in Wesley. So it was able to move the entire Wesley storyline along in just one episode. The end.
Very nice. Greg, what about you and the neutral zone?
I think my main focus on how this episode really got Next Generation onto its 2 feet, I think this was the episode where, and Angie, I don't know how familiar you are with our show overall, but one of my big things I always talk about is the first season and a half of Next Generation are...
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's painful.
They're pretty painful.
Oh, yes.
And I have always kind of used this episode as the episode where Next Generation really gets a stand on its 2 feet because they're reintroducing a species that was not very used that often in the original series. It wasn't used in the movies at all at this point as a major topic, the Romulans. I mean, Star Trek V, the Romulan ambassador, she plays a minor role, but we don't have Star Trek VI yet with the Romulan ambassador being involved. We don't have other stories about them. And I love that they reintroduced an antagonist that's not the ultra-aggressive Klingons, fight everything, do all this. Because that's so easy to do with sci-fi. You just make the alien encounter as aggressive as possible and people buy into it. Because people like action. And I was very happy that they didn't do that, because Star Trek doesn't need that, another alien race that's just as blatantly hostile all the time. Aggressive, assertive, yes. But not openly belligerent, not openly hostile. And then we get 7 years. And I know we're not talking about those 7 years. But without this episode, if this episode did poorly, like the Ferengi episode did, then the Romulans probably would never have been brought back in a serious role moving forward. And that's kind of the mirror I used. The Ferengi were introduced to try to be another antagonist for Next Generation crew, and it didn't work at all. And I think they realized that the moment they saw it on screen, they're like, oh God, what have we done? Why are they hissing and why are they crawling like this? And what is going on? So that's...
Who let Jar Jar Binks in here?
They were the worst of Jar Jar Binks.
It was not good.
And that's what I'm happy about with this episode. If they would have done that with the Romulans, we might not have seen them as often again. And then we would have missed out on all the amazing stuff we got with them moving forward.
Okay.
Supremely well acted by Mark Alamo as well, who is the future Gul Dukat.
I know. How great is that? That's so weird to see him in there. Because he does play a Cardassian later in TNG, but he doesn't... they're not the Cardassians that we end up seeing on Deep Space Nine. So, okay. Well, this is a tough one. I think, based on everything you guys are saying and putting it all in context... while the Romulans, of course, are a more significant alien species, I think that Where No One Has Gone Before is a better alien encounter episode than the Neutral Zone. Mainly because we see something brand new to Angie's point, that this is completely foreign and alien to us. There's nothing like it that we've seen before. And we don't really see it much again outside of an episode or two that continues this three-episode arc with Wesley. And the Neutral Zone is very similar to the Balance of Terror, and the Romulans are kind of the B-plot to their own story. And we focus a lot more on just the normal humans that are just out of time. So I'm going to go with the Where No One Has Gone Before over the Neutral Zone. But... So congratulations, Angie.
I demand a recount.
Well, there's always a chance for you in our Twitter poll. So for those who have been following, we launch a Twitter poll a few hours after the episode goes live, allowing you, the listener, to vote for which episode you think is the better of the pair or the matchup for that given week. And you will be able to do that for these two episodes, Where No One Has Gone Before and The Neutral Zone. So make sure you go to find at RedShirtsPod on Twitter and vote in the poll and follow us there. I do have the results from last week's poll. So last week it was Best Romance of TNG Season 1, and it was Jeremy versus myself, with Greg being the judge, and it was Haven versus We'll Always Have Paris. And
that was an interesting discussion. I listened to that just this afternoon, and it pointed out things that I would not have considered about either one. Well done.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I hope other people found the episode interesting too. Now, if I remember correctly, Greg, you had voted for Haven.
I did vote for Haven, yes.
Which made me feel really good, because that's my episode. And the Twitter poll, which is now closed, is Haven with 54% of the vote. So very close.
Another close one.
Another close one, yeah.
The Wesley one was close too, wasn't it?
If I remember correctly, it was pretty close. Yeah. Not sure off the top of my head, but it definitely was a close one if I remember right. So let's see. I can actually pull it up right here. Yeah, same actually. Coming of Age got 54% of the vote. So there you go. So very close calls. So make sure you go and vote in this poll, which will be up just a few hours after the episode goes live. The poll runs Friday through midday Monday, because we usually record Monday nights, and that's when this recording is done. So that is it for our matchup. Before we go, we have some other things to discuss, like Star Trek news.
Yeah, for those of you who are unfamiliar, some crazy stuff happened with Discovery last week. The two main showrunners, Gretchen Berg and Aaron Harberts, are out. And in Hollywood sense, they left the show, but if this was an actual private sector company, like we're used to dealing with, they were fired. And when you read the stuff that happened with them, like the behind the scenes, the words abusive, hostile, and threatening were used to describe the two of them. Like with the writing staff. To the point where like CBS, Paramount, HR representatives were getting engaged. And when it gets to that level, there's always a hostile moment at people's jobs that happens. And usually a supervisor gets engaged or whatever, and you calm things down unless it's completely egregious. This obviously hit a level of egregiousness and hostility where writers were basically going, look, either they leave or we're all leaving. And there was a witness that confirmed that they would be leaning over the table, screaming expletives at the staff members.
That's always fun.
Over Star Trek.
Yeah. Well,
I suppose
there was a lot riding on this first season, you know, trying out the new CBS on, you know, on demand kind of thing. And so they may have felt some pressure to perform, but that's not how you get people to perform. You bring them donuts.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is Alex Kurtzman is basically taking over, and Kurtzman is, you know, essentially Star Trek royalty.
Right.
I mean, his familiarity with the show and the history and the lore of everything is, I think, is pretty well known.
Well, and I want to make sure we frame it appropriately. So Alex Kurtzman, yeah, he's going to be the showrunner, but he's been involved with Discovery literally since day one. He was the first person officially signed on to the show.
Yeah.
So there's some continuity there, really.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, he's pre-Brian Fuller. And I know a lot of people were, and myself included, were disappointed when Brian Fuller had to step away from the show, given his Star Trek background. But Kurtzman was there before Fuller, been there since Fuller, and was a showrunner with Aaron and Gretchen. It was the three of them as showrunners together, which is not particularly common for a series to have multiple showrunners.
Right.
And so, you know, I don't think this is as bad for the show as people want to make it out to be. It's, you know, it's more of a bigger deal that the actors and crew were being mistreated. That's not good.
Well, right, the story of it rather than the results.
Right. Exactly.
And if you're going to make a change, you do it at the season 1-2 mark instead of the season 6-7 mark.
True.
Well, and showrunners change a lot. For people who may or may not follow me, I do Screen Heroes, which is our TV and movie podcast on the network, and we follow a lot of the DC shows on the CW, and they change showrunners from time to time. It happens. You know, Arrow has had Arrow, Flash, and Supergirl have had different showrunners, and that happens for multiple reasons. Sometimes you are looking for a different tone. You're looking for fresh eyes. Sometimes it's scheduling issues. And in a case like this, it sounds like, you know, not consolidating it down to one person is less complex and convoluted, number one. And number two, if it makes the cast and crew more comfortable, then that means you're going to get better performances and better quality out of those people.
Well, and at the end of the day, a lot of productions like this, sometimes you need that final person to just make a decision and move forward. You know, because right or wrong, you know, the committee approach sometimes works, but sometimes it doesn't. And even with movies, we're hearing early on more and more where directors and writers are being replaced earlier. Or even in the case of Solo, when it's like 60% done, they're like, wait a second, whatever we're doing just isn't working. So we got to make a change. And yeah. I'm okay with it because, you know, just Star Trek, you know, I think Discovery kind of had some problems in season one. I don't think it was the cast and crew. You know, they don't write the show. Mm-hmm. So maybe this will be a good thing. Kurtzman is that royal blood of Star Trek. And maybe, like you both have said, he's been involved since before there was ever Discovery anyways. Mm-hmm. He was one of the pitch crew with CBS to make it happen.
I mean, the truth is, if you're going to be concerned about season two at all, then the real concern right now is budget. They are a little more than 5 episodes into the season so far and are way over budget. And according to the studio, the plan is actually to siphon some of that budget from later episodes in the season. Now, this can be good and it can be bad. I am a huge fan of bottle episodes, which if you're not familiar with the term, bottle episodes are episodes that tend to take place on the ship. There's no away mission. There's no space battles. This means low special effects and low cost. And that's created some really great episodes. For example, Voyager's, I believe it's called Fractured, is the name of the episode where Voyager gets trapped and the ship is all split up. And if you walk around the ship, you end up in the wrong place and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get some really cool character episodes that way. Discovery had a bottle episode. It was the time loop episode with Mud, and I think that was a lot of fun. So you can have good episodes that way, but you can also end up with poor special effects and you know, things like that if you need big budget and you don't have it. Season one was $8 million an episode, so the show is not cheap. And the latest reports, yeah, it was beautiful.
It was gorgeous.
And the latest reports show that they're using 6 different sound stages to film season 2, sometimes using 2 filming crews at the same time. Which for TV, I mean, that's pretty unheard of. You know, a show that's like Game of pricey. Thrones would do that. Yeah. So, I can't imagine that season 2 is any cheaper than season 1, so I will have to kind of wait and see how that shakes out.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Duet from Star Trek DS9 was one of those bottle episodes with the lower budget, and it's one of the greatest episodes in Star Trek history, probably. It's the one about the Cardassian guy faking to be a war criminal just because he feels guilty.
Mm-hmm. That's a great one.
It's So who knows? This could be a great thing for Discovery. Maybe my fantasy will come true and I'll finally get my 3-episode Saru Tilly arc where they take control of everything.
Well, you know, some of Star Trek's most important aspects were due to budget constraints in the original show. You know, the transporter was invented to save money on having to do shuttle shots and sets. Spock looks the way he does because it was cheap. to do the ears. He was supposed to look more alien, you know, before the show and things of that nature. So sometimes you end up with very iconic things.
Well, Geordi's visor was a hair clip.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Right? Yep. Doesn't get much cheaper than that.
Nope. Nope. Just spray paint it. You're done.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes when budgets are constrained, you're forced to be creative and you get some amazing stuff. So hopefully that's what we get with Discovery. We'll just have to see. All right. Well, I guess that's it for us. Angie, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I want to make sure we have you back on later when we take a break from this format to talk about your book. But sure. I wanted to give you a chance to plug Casey Geeks and the book if you want and tell people a little bit about where they can find you.
Well, the website is caseygeeks.com. Very easy to remember and very easy to find me on social because I am Casey Geeks everywhere. So Casey Geeks on Twitter, Casey Geeks on Facebook, and Casey Geeks on Instagram. So you can just follow all the geeky antics, and I try to go to a lot of different events and just cover them like Kansas City Geek Reporter and make sure that people know about different events that are coming up and where they can go get their geek on with other geek-minded people.
Fantastic. Well, we'll definitely have you back on the show. I guarantee that. So thank you.
Sure. Absolutely. It was always fun to talk about Trek.
Oh, definitely. That's why we try and do it every week.
Yes.
So, Greg, where can people find you?
I can be found on Yahoo and Twitter at @the_bittersteel. And Angie, I want to echo what Derek said. It was great having you on. Hopefully you'll want to join us again. Maybe
absolutely
work on some ideas and some pitches and maybe design an episode and we'll do whatever you have on mind or something.
Okay.
We'll make it interesting. Yes. I can hear Derek's panic in his brain right now. He's like, wait. I have an approach, Greg. There's an approach to this.
No, this is great. I have no we've mixed things up. I have no problem with that. As long as I know so I can be prepared for the episode. That's all that's important.
We'll tell you 3 minutes in advance. You'll be good.
All right.
Maybe even four.
Maybe.
You can use your Google Foo and...
My Google Foo. Fantastic. Well, I am the Star Trek Dude on Twitter and Facebook. We are Red Shirts and Runabouts. We have a new Twitter account at Red Shirts Pod, which we are starting to use so you can focus just on Star Trek if you're not too interested in our other shows. So please give us a follow and don't forget to vote in the poll for this episode whether or not you think the episode Where No One Has Gone Before or The Neutral Zone is the better alien encounter of TNG season 1. And next week we'll be back with season 2, but we'll have to tell you what the topic is later because we have not picked it yet.
Spontaneity.
Absolutely. All right, we'll catch you guys next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
See ya.
Red Shirts and Runabouts is part of the Heroes Podcast Network. The show is hosted by myself, Gregory Bosco, along with Jeremy Munkin and Derek Mayer. The theme song is by Flying Killer Robots. You can find us, as well as other Heroes Podcast Network shows, at heroespodcast.com, as well as on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, and anywhere you can use an RSS feed. Follow us on social media at Heroes Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitch. And you can also email us at contact@heroespodcast.com. Engage.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.